Learning together from our diversity. Only on UJFM 95.4.
Dynamically shaping the future.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody listening. Welcome to the very first of its kind. It is the University of Johannesburg Student Wellness Center and a collaboration with UJFM. I don't know if you are aware, but the month of October is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I will be your host today. My name is Cindy Swa, and I am alongside a lot of many people who are really intrigued and happy to be here today to help you understand what is mental health. And they are here to teach us about how to manage stress and your mental health, especially now that we are facing examinations. They're going to give you some tips on how to deal with your mental health and also educate us a little bit more when it comes to panic attacks, anxiety, and dealing with depression. So each person is going to introduce themselves. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you
for coming us.
Okay, let's kick it over to Tobani.
What do I do? I'm introducing myself.
Yes.
Okay. So my name is Tobani. Mangi is the surname. I'm a psychologist. I work at PsyCare, the Center for Psychological Services and Career Development. Mm-hmm. So we provide therapy to students, but we also provide career related services. So
yes,
students that need career counseling, career guidance will come to us and we'll assist them with that. Yeah. Thanks.
Hi, guys. My name is Neo Masilo. I'm a nurse practitioner at the University of Johannesburg Center for Health for Student Health and Wellness. I can say that I'm one of the people that came with this initiative today because mm-hmm. we know that this is examination time for our students, and they experience a lot of anxiety, depression, panic attacks, because sometimes maybe they're not fully ready for their exams. So I'm happy that a panel of expertise will be able to help us in how to help them moving forward when they come to us not feeling well or not feeling ready to face their exams.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lungile Masuku. I am a postgraduate student at the University of Johannesburg. I'm also a peer educator for the Center for Student Health and Wellness, and I am also a mental health survivor.
Great. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, everyone. I am Tsakane Sono. I am an occupational therapist at Mfulo Clinic in Soweto, and I work with people that have mental illnesses as well as physical disabilities. You know, it can affect your everyday functioning. In this case, we're looking at how it affects you at school, your memory or your attention or your ability to cope, and that's where I play a very major role.
Good day, everyone. I'm Liwani Mapuli. I'm a psychiatric nurse at the Crosby Mental Health Clinic, whereby if you're having cases like what they spoke about, panic attacks, stress, anxiety, you come to us, then we offer you with mental health services. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Cindy Lee Norman. I'm a clinical psychologist at Crosby Clinic. What clinical psychologists do is we provide psychotherapy to anyone that is experiencing any form of mental challenges. Please know that there is help.
Mm. All right. We've gotten ourselves accustomed to everyone and what they do. It's time for us to get into the matter of today. Now, a lot of people tend to think that depression, anxiety are one thing. Let's start with defining what anxiety, depression, and panic disorders are.
With regards to depression, depression is when a person will be having feelings of low mood, feeling hopeless, worthless. Sometimes they will be isolating themselves. They will lose interest in things that they used to enjoy. Mm. And then sometimes they might feel like their life is not worth it, whereby they will feel like they will have suicidal ideation, thoughts of killing themselves or others. And then also with depression, depending on the symptoms, it's when you're actually feeling on the low. Your eating pattern changes, your eating pattern, your sleeping pattern changes. You can either oversleep or sleep too little. Yeah. Also with the eating, you might not be eating at all, having loss of appetite, or you might have more appetite than usual. That's when we will say a person is depressed.
Okay.
Yeah, just to add on, just to add on to that, I think what is also the underlying for depression is when we diagnose clinical depression, we have to look at the criteria and how Sister Lebu has just responded to that. But the core of it as well is there has to be that element of sadness and then anhedonia, which is your loss of pleasure. So there has to be either one of the two or both, and then accompanied by the symptoms. And that's when we consider our clinical depression, and we've got to work out a treatment plan for that clinical depression.
All right.
So, Cindy.
Yes.
Lungile here, as one of, as our student, as a mental health survivor.
Yeah.
She was actually diagnosed with depression.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe she can take
us tell us about your story,
how she
please.
Was feeling, or what were the symptoms that she was actually experiencing
Definitely.
Before she was diagnosed.
Yes. Okay, so with me, this is something that started from childhood, right? Everything built up from my childhood to where I am today. I remember it was in the year 2015. We're doing grade 10 in life orientation. And my teacher started mentioning symptoms that I could relate to, like wanting to be alone, not wanting to be around people, sleeping too little, sleeping too much, eating too little. And I was like, no, but she's actually talking to me personally, you know. And there was a time when my classmates started noticing, and then they made fun of me. They're like, are you depressed? Ha ha ha, you know, made it a joke, a whole thing. And then fast forward to 2020. I was going through a lot, and then lockdown happened. That for me was just my breaking point. I remember talking to my psychologist, and she was like, I'm so worried about you. I am really worried about you, because at this point you are becoming a danger to yourself. And that was when she suggested that I go and see a psychiatrist, which I did, went to see a psychiatrist, and he was like, no, we need to get you admitted as soon as possible. So I had to do my COVID tests. Everything was cleared. And then after that, I went to a psychiatric ward. I stayed there for a good 2 weeks. That's just how intense it was for me. And there were like a lot of tests done. He did an MRI. There were EEGs. There was just a lot I was going through. I saw an occupational therapist. I saw a clinical psychologist. It was just a lot. There was a lot going on. And it was then that I was diagnosed with BPD, which is borderline personality disorder, as well as bipolar disorder. So then I started taking treatments for the bipolar. And honestly, the side effects for me were just too much. And I just defaulted on my medication, left it completely. And my psychologist kept on asking me, like, are you planning on going back? And I said, no, I can't. It's just too much. And having to go back to my psychiatrist, I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. I just can't. And
what did you want to do anymore? Not take the pills, or like continue your life?
Not take the medication.
Okay.
So, but then I decided that, okay, you know what? I'm getting worse again, because unfortunately for me, I keep relapsing, right? And because I took myself off of the medication, I just made everything worse. Now we're going back to the very beginning. So I went back to my psychiatrist. He put me back on medication. I defaulted again. And this time, to be quite honest with you, I'm no longer on medication. And I made that decision for myself, a horrible decision, to be quite honest. It's the worst decision I could have ever made for myself. But at this particular point in time, my tablets were no longer working for me. I felt like they were just not doing anything anymore, because one of them is to stabilize my moods. It was just still the same. Nothing was changing, you know, and the other one was to sleep. I mean, my sleeping patterns are still horrible. Right. So, yeah, it's been hectic.
So how do you survive now that you're not on your meds?
Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah,
I really don't have an answer for you. I don't even want to lie. It's been tough. I think this year has been one of the most difficult years I've ever experienced. The amount of mental breakdowns that I've had this year compared to my entire life, there's no comparison.
So I'm barely surviving. Is there anyone in your family who had a problem with like their mental health?
As far as I know, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you still see a psychologist maybe?
sometimes.
Okay. Would you say maybe that helps? Like not having the pills, at least you have somebody to speak to about how you feel?
Honestly, it does help, but I feel like it's not enough. I really feel like I need more. But if I were to tell you what is that more that I need, I honestly do not know. Because there's just so much that is lacking. The psychology absolutely helps, but it does not fully resolve the issues that I have as far as my mental health is concerned.
One more question.
Yeah.
Are you feeling the way you're feeling because maybe the pressures of life or like society or like just personal reasons, like for yourself?
For me, it's definitely the pressures of life, as well as like my internal conflicts. Like I feel like I still have so many unresolved issues, like from your childhood trauma and all of that. And the more that it keeps, there were times when I thought they were resolved, but then I realized that in actual fact, they're not really resolved because they keep on coming back. And my life is just that cycle, that never ending cycle of just toxicity, basically.
Sure. Thanks for sharing your story.
Honestly, a pleasure.
It's a lot that you're going through, and I really hope you do find the light at the end of the tunnel. And thank you for surviving another day. Hopefully, like, you know, you'll keep doing what you're doing and, you know, life will become much better. As a psychologist, what do you do if you have a client like this?
Who gets off their meds,
you know?
Yeah.
And decides that I'm just going to deal with it in my own way.
I think it's important to then suggest other ways to other coping mechanisms that a person could do without using medication. Things like exercise. I would emphasize that my clients start exercising, and I'll make sure that, you know, they get that gym membership. Eating healthy. Not a lot of change you'll experience, but, you know, it's one of those things that will assist in helping with mental health issues. So it's just like those coping mechanisms outside medication.
Okay.
And there are a lot of those.
There's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But now, like in a situation like her, if you've tried exercising, you've tried meditating, you've tried journaling, all these options, what do you do?
So when we're talking about mental health, right, and just depression and just like hearing your narrative, I think it's important to also highlight that healing isn't linear, right? It's not just I've been to therapy, I've had my medication, I've tried all these coping mechanisms that I'm going to be okay. There are days where you're going to feel like, hey, I made it. I'm actually on top of the world. And then tomorrow you're going to feel like absolute trash. Like all these coping mechanisms have just gone down the drain.
Yeah.
And I think what we have to also advocate for that it's okay, you know, to have that ups and downs and those roller coasters. But as long as you just have like your support system and you find something. So taking a day by day. So today I managed this.
Yeah.
And I've made it through today. And don't think of the future, because I think a lot of the times how we struggle is we constantly think of the future. Life is very busy. It's fast paced. And just like focusing on the here and the now. Mm-hmm. And so we constantly teach mindfulness.
So would you say someone who's depressed is a sad person? Like they just don't see positivity. All they see is just darkness.
I think there's many elements to it. Right? Okay. But the core of it is that low mood, low energy, low motivation, that loss of pleasure. And it is that, you know, once you're in that dark hole and you're struggling to get out, it becomes worse. So it's not just a matter of sadness. There's a lot of elements. There's also like the biochemical elements. So if there's, do you want to come in terms of medical? So like,
okay, I guess what she's trying to say, it's when there is a hormonal imbalance in the brain. So the moment the hormones are not balanced in the brain, like if your serotonin, the one that we call a happy hormone, it's not balanced, then you are most likely going to be depressed. So basically, it's got to do with brain chemistry.
Okay.
Yes.
So there is that element, but we also have to understand, like with depression, your body is literally giving up on you. Mm. So like you're struggling to get out of bed, just like lifting the duvet or like up, and you're like, oh, it's another struggle. Just like thinking I've got to get out of bed.
Yeah.
I've got to face all these challenges. It's a struggle. So it's not just considered as sadness, like snap out of the sadness. Mm. No, it's so much deeper and there's so many layers to it.
Yeah.
That I think it's difficult to just say that depression is sadness.
Yeah. I think one of the things that we also really like to emphasize on, you know, in occupational therapy is the importance of being what we call activities healthy. Having a balance in your life when it comes to the kind of activities you engage in.
Yeah.
And finding those little things that will be that small motivation just to have you get out of the bed. Because you have, you know, an extreme loss of pleasure. You're not wanting to engage in anything. But having that, just trying to find that one thing that could be something that helps you get out of bed. Even if you say, I just did 5 minutes of this.
Yeah.
That's an achievement. And looking at things that you can actually do that can also play on that whole, you know, chemistry of your brain. The value of exercise. I mean, I see this also with my patients that it makes a bigger difference than we actually think.
Sure.
I mean, when you're exercising, like you're saying, your serotonin, your happy hormones basically are going up and you're finding that it's slowly but surely improving your mood. It's improving your sleep. And all those things can actually help you find yourself again. And I think that's something that's very important, to have those little things that you know you can do, that if I just did this just for 2 minutes, it will help me to feel better about myself. Yeah.
What kind of self?
And I'm thinking there's probably somebody who's listening to us right now and they're trying to gauge themselves or ask themselves, am I depressed or not?
Yes.
So what you can use is how you've been, because you know yourself. If you realize that there's a change in how you're now doing things, like you used to be happy to go to work, but now when you have to go to work, it's difficult for you to wake up and go to work. When you used to go out with your friends and all of a sudden you just want to stay home. I want to stay home. I don't want to do anything. Yeah. You need to be worried. It's a sign as well that you need help. Because
let's talk about those signs of depression.
So you cannot be just somebody who used to like or enjoy going out and all of a sudden you no longer want to go out. You see that your weight is changing drastically because of how you're eating all of a sudden. Yeah. You're overeating because a lot of time when people are stressing, going through stress, they would eat a lot. They would depend on food to make them feel better. And it would make you gain a lot of weight. And others experience loss of appetite. Others don't want to eat. They just don't eat at all.
Sure.
And others would then depend on other things like alcohol. You'll be drinking first thing in the morning. You want an alcoholic drink. That's where others will also start using drugs to suppress that pain or whatever they're going through to make it feel better. And they don't eat. They just either smoke or they're on drugs or they're on alcohol. They don't go out anymore. It can go to an extent of you not even wanting to bath anymore. You used to be the person who would look forward to dressing up.
Yes.
When you go to work, you're always looking forward to looking for that outfit.
Yeah.
But now we see you when you come to work, you're like, what's wrong with Cindy now? You are dressed in a very different way. Others don't even bath at all. They don't even want to see water. Like, what's the point? Why should I bath? Because that's what the mood will be telling you, or you will be having those feelings of, what's the point? Why should I I'm not looking forward to anything. I mean, nobody values me. And you're going to actually start realizing negative things from people.
Yeah.
Your manager maybe would be going through her stuff as well. And then Olivia doesn't greet you. It's a big deal.
It's personal now.
She hates me. She hates me. Mm. Now she doesn't greet me anymore. And she was not there. Others can add.
Yeah.
Can I just also like add from what you're saying that for me it's depression doesn't have to be like clinical. There are people who are functional, like I call it functional depression. But once you notice that something has changed, like the sister was saying, something has changed. You're no longer liking things that you used to like, and the body has a tendency of communicating with us. If you're feeling more tired, maybe there's something wrong. You need to pay attention to.
I think another thing that I also commonly notice is that because you are in a state of depression, your mind doesn't function as much as it used to. So you might think that maybe you're just being forgetful of things because it's just forgetfulness. But oftentimes I find that once I sit down with someone and they've been struggling maybe with their memory, or you find that you used to be able to retain a certain amount of information or be attentive a certain amount of time in a lecture. And now suddenly it's like 10 minutes in and your brain is not actually processing things the way it used to before. Then once you either, you know, refer a person to the psychologist or psychiatrist, then you get more assessments, then you find that actually a person is depressed. So I think being very mindful of your brain, things like your memory, your attention, you know yourself as a person. If you're very attentive to detail, you know maybe when you walk into the studio, you can notice this and this and that. And then suddenly, over 2 or 3 months now, you're missing the little details in what you have to do. That could also be a sign that something's not okay.
So besides taking medication for depression, what are the other ways in which you can treat it? Whether you're a functional person who has depression or extreme depression, what are those treatments that one can use?
Yes, so I can speak from an occupational therapy perspective to say, for us, our very major form of intervention is activity participation.
Okay.
So we look at you as a holistic being. What makes up Cindy? You are a student, you do this at home, you are in a relationship, maybe you are in a friend group. What happens when you have depression or any other mental illness? Now all those areas of your life are affected. Or you find that some people maybe their depression is very severe and they're not able to go back to work anymore. So it's looking at other ways of intervening to still ensure that a person is still functional. Because I love that she explained when she was sharing with her story, a lot of times, you know, the medication has very severe side effects that are not the best. You know, people gain weight or you can't sleep the way that you used to. So from our side, it's looking at activity participation and using that as a means to help you achieve quality of life again.
Okay.
And helping you sort of reintegrate back into your environment. So maybe you aren't able to come to the studio as often as you used to because you're depressed, or maybe you have increased anxiety.
Yes.
How do we reintroduce you to your environment again slowly and help you be able to cope and function at your best again? So we either use activities at the clinic level, or we even do things like work visits where we could say, okay, you haven't been to work for maybe 6 months, let's go visit your workplace. Let's find out what is required of you in terms of output and what can you achieve now. And if you can't achieve that, how can they put reasonable accommodations in place for you or restructure your environment so that you can still cope, even though now you might not be performing like you used to before. So it's looking at the activities that you do from, you know, she made an example about if someone doesn't want to bath anymore. What is the cause of that? You don't want to bath. Okay, is it low motivation? Sure. Is it that now you've developed a sense of worthlessness and you feel like there's no need for me to bath anymore? Low self-esteem, a very big factor attached to depression. So maybe it might be a thing of let's do activities that will make you feel good about yourself. Then once you feel good about yourself again, then you'd be more willing to bath and go back to work or, you know, see your friends again. So we really take that approach to say, what are the things that you want to do that make you who you are, and how can we help you do those things again?
So what if you're a student and you've came to university? Obviously, maybe you're the first out of your family who's been given this opportunity, right? And then all of a sudden, you were this happy person. Now you're or everything that we spoke about, it's hard for you to get out of bed, you can't hop into the shower, you can't attend your lectures, and then they send you to psych ed. And then you see a psychologist who's like, you've got depression. How do you break this down to parents, especially parents of color, that this is what's going on with me? I mean, I'm a straight A student. You know this from high school, but I'm just not well. How would you advise a student to speak to their loved ones about that?
Sure. I love that question because we see a lot of that where family members don't really understand what's going on. My approach is always to involve the family member. If wherever possible, I actually want to have a session where I'm able to sit down with the family and explain.
Okay.
Oftentimes the family either doesn't understand depression or there's a lot of stigmas, especially, you know, in, for example, the Black community, you'll hear people saying it's witchcraft or it's whatever. Mm. Why is a person like this? And there's all sorts of things that are not really being understood.
Yeah.
So for me, I always prefer, if I can, as best as I can, to sit with the family and explain. Then sometimes what you might pick up is that there's someone in the family that maybe has depression or also has underlying issues that they didn't deal with.
Yes.
And that's why they've developed a certain stigma towards it. And they're very apprehensive to try and help their child because they have issues that maybe they haven't dealt with. Mm. And then it also becomes an issue of helping the family so that they can best support the student. But I would say when you're a student, you don't have to take that journey alone.
Yeah,
because it's very, very overwhelming. It's very, very overwhelming. And wherever you can, try to see if someone can either, you know, help you build up your confidence enough to speak about your condition so you can approach your family about it, or rather have someone go with you to speak to your family. Yeah.
Just to add, I mean, when we're saying like families of color, we understand that depression is just like, you know, people don't understand it.
It's like excuses, study, persevere.
You don't want to persevere. Things like that. So if you can find just that one person in the family, it doesn't have to be, your mom or your dad, but someone in the family that kind of understands. Because you just need some sort of support.
Yes.
It doesn't necessarily need to come to from your parents. Mm. Yeah. So if you can just find that, even if a cousin that understands mental health better, then you can talk, person you can talk to.
So when it comes to anxiety, right, how do you differentiate it from depression? Can you have anxiety and not have depression?
Oh, yeah, it's possible. It's possible.
How?
So anxiety is mostly about a perceived threat or a threat, and how then your body reacts to that perceived threat. Then it gives you like debilitating pains. And sometimes the symptoms will be, heart palpitations, sweating of the hands, or sometimes people will have diarrhea and such. So it's different from depression. Of course, a lot of people would have depression and anxiety, but you can have anxiety and not have depression.
Let's talk about seeing someone having an anxiety attack. What do you do as a civilian? Like, you see somebody's maybe having foam coming out of their mouth. Like, it's intense. Okay, that's a seizure.
Yes.
But like, a panic attack. And you're just standing there. You're just like, what do I do? What's the most simple thing you can do for someone in that situation to try and assist them?
So when I usually get them at the campus health, they would be brought in by protection service. Maybe the student was in class writing an exam, and I would think that maybe going through the question paper, they saw this question that is out of 10 and they don't know the answer, and that's when the panic attack would kick in.
Yes.
As Tobani has explained, Hori, it's like a sense of fear or something, a threat, right? Mm-hmm. So that question has threatened the client. So they would usually feel like they can't breathe anymore. They would start breathing faster, their heart start beating fast, they are sweating, so they would bring them. So the first thing that I do, because we are able to differentiate a difficulty breathing that is medical, where there's something wrong with the lungs, and a difficult breathing pattern of a panic attack. So luckily, because of the studying that we did, you are able to see the client when they walk in what you're dealing with.
Okay.
So the first thing that you need to, that I usually do, is to try to calm them down.
Mm-hmm.
I try to calm them down. I tell them it's okay. It's not that you cannot breathe, but it's your mind telling you that you can't breathe, but you are you're actually okay.
Yes.
You are alive. You can breathe. So I would sometimes use my brown paper bags that we put medication on, and I would give them to and ask them to breathe in and out.
Yeah.
You know, I would tell them, tell yourself something positive. That I'm okay. I'm alive. I'm here. I'm not dying, because they believe that they're dying. Mm. So that has worked for me a lot, because as we continue, they start coming down, and then I'm able to talk to them and get the full history of what really happened. Mm.
Okay. I think the other thing is, because, you know, that perceived threat, it's very abstract to a certain extent, because it's not like there's someone, you know, standing next to you trying to hurt you. So it's trying to also get the person to be more anchored in concrete things. So either you can give the person something just to touch and to feel.
Yeah.
You're trying to sort of bring them back to reality, yeah, almost. Okay. So something that they can touch and they can feel, and then you just, like she says, you try to calm them down.
Yeah.
You speak, you can either ask the person to count backwards, or, mm-hmm, you know, those techniques that we do learn. If you're scared, for example, they say just count from 100 to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But just anything that will just help the person feel like, I'm here, I'm anchored to the ground,
yeah,
almost. So very concrete things. If you have something that you can sort of play for them to be hearing something in the back, whatever will bring their senses back to reality, I think is very, very important.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I also think, just to add on, when someone comes in and they're struggling to breathe, it's just to teach them mindfulness. And part of that is your breathing exercises.
Mm.
And once they've calmed and centered, because, you know, when someone is in a panic, hearing, doing this and that, it can further fuel the panic.
Mm-hmm.
So you just center them, right?
Okay.
Distract them from that initial fear that's debilitating them. And try, what I generally do is try the breathing exercises just to center them and create that equilibrium within them. And then we start, you know, negotiating what is this fear, mm, and talk it through, you know,
yes,
do some psychotherapy. And if it is a case that's very severe, like you mentioned, the foaming, let's just say that they're having severe somatic symptoms, we would generally get them to see a doctor as soon as possible, just to attend to that, because we need to keep someone calm. We need to get them in a calm space. But there's also something called pseudo,
mm-hmm,
attacks, right? So panic attacks, which is like your fake. So like,
yeah,
a lot of the times, I know I've got an exam coming up, so in my mind it's racing,
mm,
and it's not actually a panic attack as such, but
yeah,
it's pseudo.
Okay.
Sometimes just to try and navigate to get out of
the situation.
So we need to differentiate. And like Sister Neo was saying, that if you can see she differentiated the medical versus like a panic attack or anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always important to differentiate, because it can be very manipulating.
True. Mm. True.
I think it's also important to be aware of yourself as a person that is trying to help someone else as well. Because if you're now in a state of panic as well,
right,
you basically making the situation worse.
Yeah.
Right? Now the person's getting even into more of a panic. So I think also just being aware of yourself. If you feel like, you know what, I don't think I'm suited to handle this, rather get someone that you know will be calm and be able to handle the situation. Yeah.
Besides fear, what else can trigger an anxiety attack, or being anxious, basically? What else could it be?
I think overthinking.
Okay. Like, so for exams.
Racing thoughts, and they're pacing, and you just think of the one thing.
Mm.
So you think exams is coming, I'm going to fail. I'm going to disappoint my parents.
Mm-hmm.
They spend so much money. I can't go back and face them. I'm an embarrassment. And it just like escalates. So it's this one thing after the other.
Mm-hmm.
And you're creating it in your mind. And that's when you're detaching from reality.
Mm-hmm.
So overthinking is one of them.
So you meant only for exams?
No, just in general. Having anxiety.
What I've noticed is that sometimes there are triggering factors.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if with anxiety, there's something called phobias as well. So maybe you are scared of a certain thing. So if you were to encounter that particular thing that actually causes you to be anxious, it can also be a triggering factor as well.
Can you take treatment for anxiety?
Yes, you can. Like Cindy has said, based on your assessment, sometimes if it's severe, then you'll have to see a psychiatrist that's going to prescribe anti-anxiety medication. So yes, we do have clients that are taking treatment for anxiety. It just depends on the severity.
There's a very huge negative connotation when it comes to psychiatric. People start thinking chains, you know, you're going to be walking in a center where people are like really not okay. And a lot of people get to that step where they're like, we're going to refer you to a psychiatrist, and then they don't end up going to a psychiatrist. What would you say to someone who's like being referred, especially as a student, honestly, with the stigma that we spoke about with depression? You come from such a background. Now you're hearing psychiatrists and you're like, is my world coming to an end? How can you motivate someone to actually understand that it's not something negative? It's actually positive for you to become a better person holistically.
What I do at the clinic level, it's if I see such kind of situation, I go to basics. Basics will mean I first explain what is mental health, because sometimes people, like you're saying, they feel when you are psych client, you're like running naked and all of that.
Yeah.
So I think it goes with basics to say mental health, it's your health your brain functioning. So once you, so you can be stressed, it's still a mental health. So people need to know that being mentally ill, it's got nothing to do with, yes, we do have disorganized behaviors, but you can just be stressed to a point whereby it affects your daily living. Then you are a mental health. So I guess it goes to education, mm-hmm. educating. So
yeah.
Such to a point whereby they understand.
Okay.
Adding to Sister Libuani, as Thobani mentioned, a few like diarrheas. So you would realize that this client is coming back with same symptoms all the time.
Mm.
Stomach cramps, diarrhea every time. Mm. And then when you take history, you ask them, when do you realize that you actually get your stomach cramps and your diarrheas? Is it during your exam time? So maybe when you have submissions to do, assignments, mm-hmm. and they would, when you take the history, they would realize, yes. And then that's when we would link it with anxiety. And I would tell them, I suspect that your stomach cramps and your diarrhea are actually caused by anxiety. And you should see the shock in their face. Even when you ask them, is there anything stressing you? I think students think adults are the only people that can be stressed. Mm-hmm. They don't understand the concept stressed. And when I mention small things like exams can be stress.
Yeah.
You not being prepared for your exams can be stress. Or when you have a lot to study, when you have assignments, it's stress. That is stress. Stress is not only huge things where you owing cars or owing a house. No.
Mm.
That thing that keeps you awake, that you keep thinking about, it is stress.
And maybe it's your boyfriend realize, also. Your
exactly.
Girlfriend.
Relationships. You had a fight with your partner.
Yeah.
It is stress. Then they were like, oh, okay. Because I think they thought stress is something else, and they are young. According to them, I'm too young to have stress. Mm. And then when they start understanding, as Sister Libu says, it goes to the education.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's when they realize, oh, okay, girl, because now you've been coming several times. We can't continue giving you same medication. Because remember, we are very mindful of your kidneys. Every medication that we give you repeatedly, we start getting worried. So we need to get to the center of the cause of this diarrhea and stomach cramps. And I believe that if you can see a psychiatrist, a psychologist, then they can prescribe. And if they can conclude that it's anxiety, then they can prescribe you something for anxiety. It will deal with everything. And that's when the person will start feeling comfortable and understanding. Mm-hmm. So health education, when you educate them, it works better. They receive it very well.
Yeah. And in my situation, I'm someone that does not like doctors. Like, I do not like doctors. Every time when I have to go see a doctor, I panic.
Yeah.
I remember when I had to go see my psychiatrist, I was like, okay, you know what? Okay, we're just going to see a doctor. It is what it is. I will panic if I panic.
Sure.
So I got there, and when he said you have to be admitted, I literally lost it. Because I'm like, there's no way I'm going to a psychiatric ward. Like, that's the same image that people think. Yeah. It's exactly what I thought. Like, people chained up, and I was like, I'm not going there. Mm. I'm really not going there. And he's like, no, don't worry about it. That is really not what it actually is. Mm. He's like, you're just going to see. It's literally going to be like your home away from home. I was like, no, there's no way. I don't believe him.
Like, you know, wellness center. They call it a wellness center.
Yes. Yeah. But because I wanted to take, you know, take charge of my own mental health, I decided, let me go. And when I got there, I was like, oh, it's actually not bad at all. It's really not what I expected.
Talk to us about the experience there. Like, the groups that you have when everybody's, I don't know, I've never been to a wellness center. I'm guessing off what I see on, like, movies. Do you have those group sessions where you speak, where everybody speaks about, like, why they're there and how you guys are coping? Talk to us about your one-on-one a conversation that you had with your psychiatrist or your psychologist, and also settling into that environment.
Okay. Did we have group sessions? No. Mm-hmm. Every single session that we had was individual.
Okay.
When I got there, because I unfortunately got there late, all my things started on the next day.
Okay.
So I actually struggled to sleep the first night because it's like a new place and I was just not comfortable. Mm. But I was given like medication to help me like relax my mind so that I can be able to sleep. Okay, woke up the following morning and then I had sessions with the clinical psychologist, the occupational therapist and the psychiatrist.
Yeah.
So basically the sessions with my clinical psychologist were to deal with the issues that actually brought me to the wellness center.
Mm.
And then my one-on-one sessions with the occupational therapist was like everything activity related, like what are your dreams, what are your goals, what are your pet peeves, you know, all of those things that are going to like help you, you know. And I'm unfortunately a cutter. So there are times when I really find myself in like the darkest of places and I just take a razor blade and I cut myself. So that was some of the things that I was talking to my occupational therapist about. And she actually drew beautiful flowers on my arms. Mm-hmm. And she's like, tell me, like, write down here what you want. And I wrote all the things that I wanted on these beautiful flowers. And she said to me, instead of cutting yourself, think about all of these beautiful flowers and all the beautiful things that you wrote here.
Yeah.
You know, rather than to cause harm to yourself, because remember that at the end of the day, your life is mostly important.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you are no longer here, all the hopes and dreams that you wrote on your arms are just going to disappear. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to be buried with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those are the kind of things that I went through during my time at the wellness center, and all that's some of the things that we did there.
Sure. Thanks for sharing that.
I think I also just want to say that there's different, you know, degrees to having a mental illness or mental health issues. And there's also different types of recovery processes and different types of facilities that are available. Whereas someone might go to maybe a very, I would say strict, for lack of a better word, sort of a mental health facility. Somebody else might be placed in a different place that is more open to you being free in that environment. It all depends on what level are you at with your condition, how is your behavior because of your mental illness. Some facilities might have groups that are being run there. Some might not. It might just only be one-on-one sessions, and that it's important to understand that everyone's recovery is different. It's a very individualized journey, and when you come to our facilities, we're looking at what do you need specifically as a person. And I think I just wanted to add with saying, you know, with breaking the stigma around mental health, we always have to look at it as you are basically healing yourself, getting back to recovery the same way you would if you had a physical injury. And I know we make that example a lot of times, but literally if you see it that way, it will help you get out of those situations. Mm-hmm. You know, I've personally had experiences with very hectic depression episodes, but you think of it as, okay, when I go to the gym, it's basically like me changing the bandage if I had a hand injury.
Yes.
It's just, okay, the next time that I decide to wake up the way I used to and put a bit of makeup on, it's me basically stretching my arm so that my arm heals.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you look at it as nursing yourself back to health, except it's not something you can see, then it really breaks that stigma that exists about it. Yeah.
Then with panic attacks, what's the difference between having an anxiety and panic attack, because we spoke about like fear and overthinking when it comes to anxiety. But panic attacks, how would you say you're definitely having a panic attack than anxiety?
You
reached the mic.
So with your panic attacks, it's like physical symptoms. So your body is literally becoming symptomatic. So some of the symptoms of your panic attacks is your dizziness, your heavy breathing, shortness of breath, heart pacing, racing heart.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can have your fainting spells, right? So it's literally your body becoming physically sick. Yeah. In a sense. So I can be like, I'm having a panic attack, I can't breathe. And you think, like, your mind is convinced you cannot breathe. And literally, you cannot breathe. And so you can have these fainting spells as well, where you get dizzy and you just faint. Right? Mm. So panic attack is something that happens instantaneously, whereby your anxiety is something that's long-standing. It's something that builds, right?
Okay.
And it can then lead to a panic attack as well.
So you don't need exterior influence. It could just be something internal. And it can happen randomly at any time, unprovoked.
It can be external, internal. It in that moment, if something is threatening you,
mm-hmm.
you can have that panic attack. If you perceive an object as threatening.
Okay.
And I think with anxiety, earlier on, Sister Libu was speaking about anxiety can be associated with something. So, for example, we also see at our clinic a lot of social anxiety, where a person has fear of being in a social setting, then that being in a social setting can then elicit like some sort of attack where you can't breathe now, or if it's specifically like the fears that, you know, she mentioned, if you have a fear of something and now when you are next to that, then your body responds to that.
What's the easiest way of creating a self-care routine that will gradually get you out of depression and anxiety, as well as avoiding panic attacks? Because you did mention earlier on that, you know, you can start finding motivation when you put some makeup on, and also going to the gym, like changing your Band-Aid. What are those basic steps that you can take to better your mood and how you feel, or things that you previously might have feared?
So I always, especially with people who have depression, I always encourage that they start small.
Mm.
10 minutes of doing something daily
mm-hmm.
can take you out of depressive thoughts and depression.
Yeah.
Don't think about, even when you go to the gym, I always say to my clients, start with like 10 minutes, but just be consistent in doing that. Mm. So don't think about, I'm going to do this today, I'm going to do that tomorrow, because you're not going to do it. You're not going to do those things. One of the things that people struggle with, people who've got depression, is procrastination.
Mm.
You can plan. Like people could actually plan, I want to study.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. I want to study
tomorrow.
I've cleaned my table. When you sit there, you see your phone.
Oh.
And you are there the entire time. Yeah. But when you start small, it's better. It's a trick.
Okay.
Yeah. I think even little things in your environment are very important. Little things like open the window, open your curtains, be in light, right? If the space that you're in can be quite dark, just try to get some light in there.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, little things like pot plants or cactus or something that kind of is an indication of life of some sort in your space can be very, very helpful. It might seem like a small just plant or whatever, but just watering that plant every day, those are the little things, your tricks you're playing on your mind, like he's saying, to almost get your mind out of that state. And I also find things like, what is it called? I forgot, those dispenser things with the smells.
Incense.
Yes. And there's other ones. A diffuser. I have something that when you are in that space, it just activates your senses. So that's what we also really want to do, focusing on engaging your senses with things that kind of bring you back to your environment.
So for me, I think we have a lot of people listening. So if I had to speak to the listeners, I would say for me personally is first acknowledging that something is wrong. Because sometimes we are then told, do this, and then it serves as an escape. So in not actually acknowledging and owning up that, look, something's actually wrong.
Yes.
So I think first normalizing it for yourself, sitting with that intensity, and it's okay to sit with it, to be like, okay, something is wrong. It's okay to feel this way. So normalizing it within yourself, and I think that's when you break the stigma already, when you've normalized it within yourself, and then you are able to work on like a progress of some sort for yourself.
I remember we had a project with Lungile. Where I gave her a task to at least speak to someone, because during my history taking with her, I picked up that she actually doesn't speak to anyone, whether in class, she's in our what we call peer education group in the clinic, and she also was not talking to anyone. So I realized that she doesn't interact with anyone. So I gave her a task that I need you to start a conversation with someone, say the first word to somebody, and then you must come and give me a report back. We did it for like how long?
Like 2-3 months.
she literally had to come back and give me a report that, Stanawa, I spoke to somebody, I got to ask their names, because she would go in class, come out, sit next to somebody. Sometimes I can imagine it can be two people next to her. And she would sit, listen to the lecture and leave. And I was like, you are going to get somebody's name, at least.
Yeah.
Say, hi, I'm Lungile. What's your name?
But so you still studying during COVID? Yeah. Or were you done? You were in university at the time?
Yeah. My first year was in 2019.
Okay.
And then I finished doing my undergrad last year. So now I'm doing my postgrad.
How did you, was that better for you?
Studying
COVID? Online.
Honestly, yes.
Okay.
Because I've realized that in as much as I'm an extrovert and in as much as I'm a people's person, sometimes people can be too overwhelming and all that you want to do is to be in your own space. However, I feel like it was kind of like good but not good at the same time, because I lost that interaction with everyone else, because everyone else was now on a screen, right? You could not see people anymore. If you needed help, you couldn't really go to anyone and ask for help. So I feel like for me, it worked because I was in my own space.
Yeah.
But it also didn't work because I just feel like for my learning, it was not as conducive.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did you manage to get ready for your exams? Because now you were going through the medication and then you stopped with the medication. How did you graduate? Let's talk about that. That's huge.
Honestly, I don't know how I made it. I honestly do not know how I made it. I think for 2020 and 2021, it was okay because I was doing continuous assessments. It wasn't really as bad. It wasn't stressful because I know during the exam period, I'm probably just finishing up my assessments. And then after that, I'm done, you know. And then came last year when everything had to go back to contact. It was hard. I don't even want to lie. It was difficult. I almost didn't make it.
How did you study? Like, are you an audio learner, visual?
I'm an audio and I'm a visual learner.
Okay.
All right. So I would like, honestly, I honestly don't know how I made it. Really, I don't know.
Maybe you're smart, NG.
Listen, maybe I'm not, you know. I think for me, I learned to pace myself. Okay. I think that is the one thing that I learned to do. I learned to pace myself and try to balance out my life as much as I can. Right. So I'm someone that lives like a basic, boring life. If I'm not at home, I'm at school. If I'm not at school, I'm at church. If not, I'm just, you know, I'm always at home. So it was easier for me because then I knew that my life is not that busy. There's not that much noise in my life. So I was able to balance out my life and pace myself accordingly. But towards the end, I almost did not make it. I remember there was this one module that was really giving me grief. It happened that I wrote my final exam. I failed. I wrote my supplementary exam. And I failed my supplementary exam as well.
Yeah.
However, the reason why I passed was because my semester mark allowed me to pass. I passed, like, isn't it like 40%? If you get 40% in an exam, you like fail, but you pass, right? So yeah. when they put your marks together, I got a 50. Okay. So that is how I made it. But other than that, honestly, sure. I almost did not make it. And this year, I don't even want to talk about this year because this year is such a mess. I got into postgrad. Everything was fine. February, I was fine. March, I was fine. April, I was fine. May, started having my mental breakdowns. Started missing deadlines. I'm just, every time when I'd be in my lectures, I'd be fine in class. But as soon as I would leave, I'd forget everything that was said. So it was just that thing that just was just like, it
what
was
are you studying?
Messed up. I'm doing my BA honors in applied linguistics and literary theory.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah. So
you're a good communicator.
I try. So since then, everything's just honestly gone downhill. However, I have communicated with my lecturers to let them know that, okay, I am really not okay. There's just a lot going on. So then we've taken the decision that I'm going to study part-time instead of full-time. So that is the only way in which I was coping. Other than that, I would have basically kissed my honors goodbye.
Sure. You found a solution.
Yeah.
Proud of you.
So I wanted to come in because when we're talking about these strategies, you would know if you've been to psychiatry that we give you like 15 minutes to just sort of screen and see if you need therapy or you need to be referred somewhere else. And some students will come to me and say, yeah, but we need strategies, you know, to cope because we're going to be waiting for like 2 weeks. And so there's an acronym that I've learned. So it's GRATE. So G is standing for gratitude. So I would say to them, start with something as small as gratitude. Waking up in the morning and seeing those things that you are grateful for.
Yeah.
So when you are depressed, there's a lot of negativity going on.
True.
So you want to sort of enforce positivity. And you can only do that with perhaps gratitude. Gratitude, you are not even trying to convince yourself. You are grateful of things that are already happening. So you don't feel like it's work. You're like, I'm grateful for being alive. You are alive. I'm grateful for being at UJ, making it, for being smart. Because if I wasn't smart, I wouldn't be here. Acknowledging that, you're enforcing and reinforcing positivity. So gratitude, relaxation, and, you know, I'll say, learn to just relax. Take like 10 minutes of your day in the midst of the storm and just like, you know, breathe and just like, you know, just relax. And there's a lot of breathing techniques that I will say to students, go look for breathing techniques, mindfulness breathing on YouTube. And that is very, very helpful. So as they wait to be seen for therapy, they'll be doing these things. And another also, so great will be gratitude, relaxation, exercise, if they can, acknowledging their feelings, like she was saying, just acknowledging how you feel, sad, and just sitting with that sadness will be very important. So, you know, those are some of the things that I would tell my clients
and the tea?
To do. Sorry? Great. Yeah.
Just great.
Or tea. Tea is for just tracking your thoughts.
Oh, okay.
This is what I'm thinking. Because, you know, thinking thoughts affect how you feel and how you behave. So you'd know when we're talking about cognitive behavioral therapy, we are saying, you know, if you change the way you think, it's going to affect the way you feel and eventually affect the way you behave. If you weren't doing your schoolwork and you're procrastinating, when you start changing the way you think, saying, you know, saying something positive, it affects how you feel and you eventually do your work.
And I think something that's also quite nice is having like a box or like a bowl of affirmations, basically. That's a very nice one. You can just take a few minutes where you sit down, just write a lot of quotes or things that encourage you, or even do it with a group of friends, and you put it in a box or in a bowl, and each day you take out one, just something that will be an encouraging thought to you. And I think just to, you know, hop onto what he's saying about tracking your thoughts, the power of journaling. We really underestimate it, but there is so much power in actually sitting down with a pen and a paper. Either in the morning when you wake up and you're writing your gratitude list, and then at night before you sleep, don't, you know, be sleeping with so many racing thoughts.
Mm.
But the power of journaling is...
It's life-changing.
It really is.
It really is. It really, really is. And I was just about to say, like, discover what your love language is, you know, amongst your family and friends. Maybe it's words of affirmation. Maybe it's quality time. Maybe, you know, acts of service, just to get out of your own head and give back to other people. It'll show you that, like, you're not alone, and you might think your problem is as big, but there's other people having bigger problems. Also, what he said, like, being grateful for things like the water's running. I can do my laundry. There's electricity. There's no load shedding, you know? Those things like that. Just to wrap it up, what are the tips that we can give to students to help with their mental care now that it is exam time?
I think I'd say the first thing is a lot of anxiety can come from not being well planned, in the sense of you don't have a timetable, you don't have a schedule of some sort, just something that will help you not use up extra mental space trying to plan.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we need to look at it as a sense of I'm trying to use whatever mental capacity I have for when I need it.
Yeah.
Then, you know, if I don't need it, then I shouldn't be overexhausting my mind. So writing down, having your list, knowing when are your exams, and the basics of having your timetable, put it on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Have a study timetable, because then your mind is not over, you know, overacting on other smaller things.
Yeah.
And I think also in the midst of that, it's okay also in between to cry if you need to cry.
Mm.
Like, it's okay to cry and not hold in too much emotion if you're not okay.
Yes.
And then in between, just trying to find things that will give you pleasure outside of school.
Mm-hmm.
Just whatever little things you can do. Obviously, don't use those things now as an escape and procrastination technique, but find little things that will just be like, okay, just for, I'm not writing maybe this week, just one day this week, something that I can do that will just take my mind out of that space for that week, I think is very important.
I think also just to highlight, anxiety is normal, guys. Mm-hmm. Can we just acknowledge that having anxiety is normal, especially when it comes to exams or you're going to do public speaking or anything.
Mm.
But when it becomes debilitating and it stops you from doing what you need to do, that's when you need to start putting in measures in place to just stop you from going in a downward. So, for example, we all need anxiety. If we didn't have anxiety, we'd all be relaxed and chilled and nonchalant and not want to do anything. But that bit of anxiety that we have pushes us to study. It pushes us to want to pass, right? So I think preparing, like we're talking, just like having a routine and planning and preparing, but also eating healthy, eating well, you know, taking breaks in between studying. Don't cramp. That's the worst you can ever do, is cramp.
Yeah.
Right? Taking care of yourself, doing some self-care, whether you do a mask or you just put your feet up and meditate on something. I think another form of just anchoring a person when feeling anxious or depressed is also looking at what your faith is and anchoring yourself in something of that sort that just brings you that calmness.
Mm.
So I think that there's a lot of techniques that can be applied.
Okay. And finally, if the listener, the student needs some help, I know they can go to PsychEd, and we will also touch about the clinic that you come from, Crosby Clinic, right? Crosby Clinic, yes. Can we talk about that? The services that you offer and where the students can reach out for help if they feel that they can't do it anymore.
Okay. I'm based at the Campus Health. I know, guys, that it can be very frustrating for you to have to book appointments with us, unfortunately, but that's how it works. But you can book an appointment with us and come and see us. As our panel has said, there is help out there. You don't have to die solo. You don't have to be alone or feel alone. Come to the Campus Health and then we will refer you to the relevant people.
Okay. Once you get a referral, it's very important that you attend to the referral as soon as possible, because what I've noticed at the clinic level is that students will be referred, but then they come 3 months or 4 months later. And then by that time, then you start asking yourself how serious is the issue. And also, we also talk about the legality of the referral. Because, I mean, when something is more than 3 months old, we consider it as old. So if you do get a referral, come to us. Let's get your mental health sorted so that also you can also proceed. It's exam time now. Keep your mental health in check, then at least you can focus on your exams.
Yeah, I think it's also just very important to know that there's local clinics in all the areas around, you know, Joburg. If you're in Soweto, there's different local clinics you can go to. If you're this side, Auckland Park, wherever you are, there's a clinic that is close to your area, and that clinic will mostly have mental health services, psychologists, psychiatrists, mental health nurses, social work, occupational therapists. So you just go to the clinic, and oftentimes I find that there's a lot of anxiety for people about, they know they're not okay, but once I get to the clinic, what do I do? What do I say? You can just say, can I please have the mental health department? Or can I please see a psychologist? Or can I please speak to the social worker? Then whoever you make contact with will be able to refer you accordingly. But please don't not go to the clinic because you feel like, I don't know what I'm going to do when I get there.
Yeah.
Oftentimes people think I'm only supposed to go to the clinic because I just burnt my hand. They'll be able to immediately see what's wrong. But go to the clinic and just say, can I please have the mental health department? And whoever you find there will be able to assist you. But there's a local clinic near wherever you stay that you can go to.
All right. We'll wrap it up and leave it there. That is the end of Episode 1 for Stress and Mental Health Podcast here with the University of Johannesburg Students Health and Wellness, as well as in collaboration with UJFM. If you need to call the helpline for the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, it is 0800-567-567. And if you don't get help there and you are a student at the University of Johannesburg, just go to our website, UJ, you know what to do, and you'll find more information under the SciCad department. But thank you so much for listening, and we will definitely see you in our next podcast. All the best for your exams. You know you are not alone.